This is the Definitely Uncertain podcast, brought to you by Gold Rock Capital. Each week, we look at how high net worth families can improve their lives, decisions, and investments in a deeply uncertain world. We always aim to provide practical information, even if we can't offer specific investment advice. This is the Definitely Uncertain podcast, and my name is Darren Rockman, and I am a partner with Gold Rock, the more than 20-year-old multifamily office servicing high net worth families in Israel and around the world. And with me, once again on the podcast, is my old friend and partner at Shavit Capital, Gary Liebler. Hi, Gary.
Hi, Darren. Nice to catch up again.
It's nice to catch up. And so just for those of you who didn't hear our previous episode, Gary, maybe just give us 30 seconds on you and what you do.
I'm the founder and managing partner of Shavit Capital, and we're a fund which has been active for over 15 years. We're now managing our fifth fund, and what we do is we invest in late-stage technology companies. The emphasis is on the last round of finance, ideally before an exit, not so relevant today, but especially pre-IPO. And we're investing across the stream. That means in all areas, as long as they're technology-based companies.
Okay, great. We are, as a country, at war for the last 3 weeks, since the 7th of October. This is having a massive impact on every facet of Israeli society. And first, I want to talk to you as an immigrant, as somebody that lives here, as someone that is very ingrained both personally and professionally in the Israeli economy. As a society, what's going on? What do you see that's going on here in Israel right now?
We have to look at it on two levels. We're all recovering. We all have a concoction of emotions. We're in shock. We're in horror. We lost confidence. We felt guilty for those who were killed, kidnapped, missing. We were angry at our leaders, angry at the staff-ups. And at the same time, there is an incredible inspiration as well at the ground level. Everyone is volunteering. Everyone is helping. Everyone is doing something from one end or another. So it's a unique atmosphere of a multiple of emotions. And many of us have our kids serving in combat units, boys and girls. And it's rough. And for many of us as immigrants, we've been here, I've been here since the Gulf War, but none of us have experienced what we're experiencing now. It's different, it's challenging, it's frightening. But I want to emphasize, there's a level of confidence here which is inspiring as well. How does that affect all of us? Every one of us is now, this is a cloud hanging over all of us. And with all due respect to this interview and what we're going to discuss in terms of business, everything is secondary. And yeah, That's rightfully so.
Yeah. You started to talk about what's happening with us as a society. A lot of that has actually had its roots in, to be honest, the tech sector in which you work, and some of those leaders have come to the fore. Some of them had sort of raised their profile during, the political fights that happened really, from the beginning of this year until the 7th of October, and now have been swept into the dustbin of history, one would expect. What are you seeing there? What are you seeing there in terms of the way that civil society and maybe some of the strongest parts of civil society have come maybe to the rescue?
Well, before October 7th, this country was as divided as it's ever been in a scary way. But people didn't quite understand the implications of that lack of unity and how far we will be tearing apart. We were fighting. We weren't just fighting over the legal reforms. We were fighting what it meant. What type of Jewish country did we want to build? What did it mean to be a Jewish country? And we were being torn apart. So the Almighty works in strange ways. No one's going to justify and can explain why we had such a terrible and tremendous and horrendous loss, and we're still suffering. But it's an opportunity for soul searching for all this country and for every single sector of society has much to answer for. But one of the clear things that's happened is people have been reminded that above all, we need to unite. So when you talk about the VC industry in particular, Many of them were leading spokesmen for opposed to the legal reform, not all of them. And in that sense, that made sense because many of the venture capitalists are very involved in Israeli society outside their funds. I give that's one of the things that's a very powerful part of this industry. But when it came to the October 7th, everyone, without exception, didn't matter what your views were, everyone is united. In fact, you'll see that some of the endeavors that are going on at the grassroots level are being led by some of these same VCs who are opposing the legal reform. So
yeah.
it is a wonderful thing. The other thing is, we learned a lesson. When people are pushing to extremes, those extremes were dangerous. We had potentially, I'm not saying this is why the war happened, but yes, we did look weaker. Arguably, we were weaker. People were talking about, you know, refusing to do army service. And as you certainly know, Darren, and many of the people who are listening, those who came and were caught up, we're talking about units where they not just 100% return to their units. We had units in 150%. And, you know, the joke initially was with all of these units is that they were being so well supported by the country that the kids who were serving in these units were putting on weight because so much food was coming to them.
So I'll tell you a personal story. About 2 weeks ago, we went to visit my son who's down in South in one of the units. And on the way out, one of his commanders came up to me and said, please take this cake. We can't eat so much cake. And he gave me a cake that had been baked by some family. And you know, he didn't have the heart to throw it away. So I left the base with a chocolate chip cake.
And I think that tells you a lot about the atmosphere of this country. People are really uniting in a strong way and across the board. It's not just the typical groups that you would expect. We've been focusing on the VC industry, but it's higher ed from their angle. Every single element of society, left, right, is irrelevant now. And we are united. And I think that is one of the good things coming out of this war.
Yeah.
Hope will be like that after the war. That's another.
Well, that was going to be my next question. You know, and again, we'll move on to something business-like maybe in a minute. But as a society, how do we maintain this? How do we perpetuate the incredible feelings that all of us are feeling of national unity and national purpose alongside the grieving and the mourning and the soul searching?
There's going to be a period of soul searching after this war. Some of it's already starting now, and I would argue starting prematurely. We're not ready for it. We've got a lot to process. In the meantime, we have to focus on winning a war. So that unity is strong now, but there's a lot of anger. And we've got to make sure that it's channeled positively. And I want to emphasize, there is not a sector of society that hasn't got to do some soul searching, from religious Zionists to left to right to secular to the ultra orthodox, and even all of us as a society, as a state, we got used to our own citizens living with missiles falling them on every day, and it didn't concern enough of us. We didn't stand up. And all of us realized that that was a fallacy. I'm not going through what the military mistakes were, the intelligence mistakes, but we as a people didn't stand up for our brothers and sisters in the South as strong as we should have. But the lessons, if we can conduct, this is going to be the challenge. Can we do this soul searching in a way that isn't out just to spill blood of others?
Yeah.
And I say, I know that's not the greatest expression to use right now, but we need to do it in a very careful way so that it's a constructive process. We learn from mistakes and grow from this afterwards.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that one of the unfortunate parts of Israeli society that developed over, and I don't know if it's the last 15 years or the last 25 years, was a winner-take-all mentality within the political sphere where, you know, you won and that gave you carte blanche to pursue your agenda, even if half the country thought that it was a terrible idea. And, you know, I think the question is whether or not that changes and we start to try and think about more consensus building exercises and the way to reach decisions, not just because one side of the political spectrum thinks it's a good idea, but because, you know, we build a broad base of support for not for everything, but for major changes to the way that we live here.
Clearly, that's what's required. Whether our leaders, and I think there are going to be a new generation of leaders coming up, it doesn't mean it's going to happen overnight.
But yes, if they can't learn that, we're going to have mistakes again. So hopefully that's really what's going to happen.
Yep. Okay.
And by the way, that relates also just to our dealings with the Jews overseas. There's got to be a soul searching across the board.
Yeah. And it's completely clear that what's happened here, as we were saying just before we started recording, is not limited in its impact to Israelis. It's really, this is a worldwide Jewish issue that we all have to confront together. So on that somewhat sober note, let's now just turn to what we do in our day jobs. Obviously, the situation in Israel is having a very, very wide impact. And it is also having an impact on the economy, and it's having an impact on business. From your perspective as somebody in the venture world, and of course this comes on the back of what was already not an easy 18 months, nothing comparable, of course, to what we're all experiencing now, but from a very narrow and myopic business sense, not an easy 18 months. So how is the Israeli tech economy dealing and managing in what is an unprecedented and probably will continue to be an unprecedented situation here in Israel?
What's really going on with the high-tech companies is a reflection of what's going on in the country. There isn't a person who hasn't been affected by what's going on. There isn't a person who doesn't know someone, unfortunately, who has been killed, is now missing, or even is a hostage. So we're all suffering.
Or injured.
Or injured, absolutely. And all of us have children who are one way or another serving on the front lines or serving the country in one level or another. So this is very much a war which affects all of us. And when you apply that to the companies, we have companies where there can be between 10 and 20% of the employees are now doing reserve duty. It's no longer reserve duty, they're doing active duty. Yeah. And it's not like they're going away for 10 days. They may be away from their companies for a long period of time. This includes senior management. So the effects on the companies is very real. On the other hand, we're a strong, durable country, and that applies to our companies as well. So it's not business as usual, but guess what? One of the best responses to this terrible situation also is to continue as much as possible as normal. So all our companies are functioning. All of them are selling. If they were selling before, they're continuing to sell, and they are continuing. And that's part of the response. But again, we can break this down, because those companies that are strong, they can deal with this, they can absorb the shock, they can absorb less employees being around, and really it's not even going to affect their bottom line in most cases. Those that are more weaker, it's a bigger problem, because if they're losing a big share of their employees or an important employee, he may not be able to be replaced. So we do have companies that are struggling. And when it comes to finances, no company is going to be trying to raise money now. But as we always know, there are always companies that don't plan it or aren't as lucky. And companies that have planned to raise money, if they don't need to, great, they'll wait a few more months or even longer and manage. Unfortunately, we have companies that are struggling and need to raise money now. And those companies are going to face very real challenges, because the primary source, or mainly the early sources of funding, either be from existing shareholders and or a few Israeli funds. So in the immediate term, there are real challenges.
Yeah. One of the things that's that happened in the macro in Israel after previous wars, and going back 20 years, is always in the day after, there's been a huge spurt of growth and huge spurt of activity. Is this different? Is the depth of the trauma and the impact on society, is that going to mean that the expected length of the war, and our leaders across the board are preparing everybody for a long protracted conflict, not something that's going to be over, and there's Hamas, and of course then there's Hezbollah, and what do we do about all of that, and is that a sustainable, or the lessons that we learn now applicable also to our northern border? What do you think is going to be the outcome on the other end of this? How does the day afterwards look like in terms of business in Israel?
Listen, let's be clear about a few things. This is not the first time Israel's been challenged. This is not a war where survival is at stake. Okay, this is a very difficult war and it's going to be very painful. But no one's in any doubt that we're going to not just win this war, we're going to come out stronger. But it's going to take time. So in terms of the high-tech industry, I don't have a doubt. I want to be very clear about this to all your listeners. The story is just as exciting. It's going to remain exciting. And I can tell you in terms of the investors, I have been in touch with investors all over the world, and including large funds who have never invested in Israel before, following what's going on and telling me, Gary, as soon as we can, we're coming to Israel and we're going to be investing with you. And I haven't had a single investor. I want to be very clear to this. Not a single investor in any of my funds who's turned around and said to me, oh my God, please get my money out of Israel. Right. On the exact opposite. Some, including those who are non-Jewish, are saying, how can I help? Where can I donate my money? Where's the best way? Where should it go? So not a doubt that we are going to be strong. And I want to remind people, forget this. We only think that it's always been a picnic here in Israel. I remember during the second Intifada, okay, it was pretty rough here.
I remember too. It was really rough.
I remember business carried on in crazy circumstances sometimes. I had to fly sometimes to Cyprus for board meetings. Okay, the foreigners couldn't come. We understood it. We respected it. And in retrospect, maybe it was a bit bizarre, but we carried on. The Israeli management, the Israeli employees, we're all tough. We know how to apply, and everything's going to be fine on that front. It is true that there will be a certain percentage of foreign investors who have had a bit of a shock and will take a bit of time to
come back.
They're not going to all be charging in tomorrow. They're going to wait and see when things calm down, but it will. And I can say I don't believe there will be a single investor that's not going to be coming back here full steam. And I'll even say on top of that, remember, only a couple of years ago, we signed the Abraham Accords. We're opening up ourselves to new markets. And I can tell you messages I'm getting from that area of the world as well are also very encouraging.
Okay. All right. Well, that's on that optimistic note. And, you know, in these rather difficult days, a dose of optimism is a good thing. Firstly, we will finish this off, firstly, by saying thank you to you. And secondly, by wishing a speedy recovery to all of those who were injured on October 7th. The captives should be brought back home in one piece, and our armed forces across the country should be successful in their missions. And our children should all return safely and soundly to their homes when this is all over.
Absolutely. Let me say amen to that. Thank you.
Okay. Gary Liebler, in what is probably the most bizarre podcast recording that I have done in the 3 years I've been doing this, thank you very much. I appreciate you being on.
Thank you.